You are listening to Noise in the Mega City. This month on the program, we will listen to the noise of sporting contests, real and synthesized.
So I should probably start, like, what is or was your sports team growing up?
It is the Yankees because my entire family is from New York, even though I, you know, grew up in Columbus. My entire family is from New York and has, like, a good amount of my family has a you know, long running connection to the Yankees. So I sort of started really only getting into baseball when I was maybe like 12 or something like that. My parents are not sports people at all, but some of my extended family is. So I would see them like watching Yankees games and got into baseball. And I actually, like, the first time I really paid attention to the Yankees was the 2004 ALCS.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it's like the way I became a Yankees fan was by watching them, you know, lose a 3-0 lead.
I mean, it's a kind of rooting for the underdogs. I mean, I'm a Ooh, Mets fan, so we have a bit of a natural rivalry here, but
yeah.
I mean, you actually got to see the Yankees lose.
Yeah. In the time since I've become a Yankees fan, the Red Sox have won the World Series way more than the Yankees have. So, so in that, by my book, that means that the Yankees are the underdog. No, but actually, I mean, the other thing is that, like, I definitely follow the Yankees the most. At a certain point, I really have become less a fan of specifically the Yankees and more of just the narrative of baseball as it happens from year to year. And I mean, I follow the Yankees the most, and ultimately, if I had to choose, I would, you know, I root for the Yankees, but at the same time, I also am aware of when it is not in the storyline of the season's best interest for the Yankees to win, and I respect that. And it's okay if, like, it turns out whatever the White Sox or something win next year instead of the Yankees, or the Padres or the Dodgers repeat and become a dynasty. Like, I understand how those, like, I would not be super disappointed if those storylines, like, became the story instead of the Yankees winning all the time.
Welcome to Bank One Ballpark in Phoenix. Today's game is brought to you by Acclaim Sports.
It's a great day for a game. Let's head down to the action as the two teams are ready to play. Standing in, Jacques Jones.
Play ball!
Hit hard in the air. He makes the catch. Coming up, Todd Walker. Swing and a miss, and down he goes. The pitch is fouled away, well out of play.
Foul ball.
He's ahead in the count, 0-1. Line drive to right center. He makes the catch. Foul ball. He goes down swinging. Coming up, Matt Williams. There's a drive way back. It is high. It is far. It is gone. A left-hand hitter steps up to the plate.
I do see a huge amount of connections between the process of enjoying music in general and enjoying sports, and maybe to some extent also the specifically the act of composing and the act of constructing your own sports fandom. I think, for one thing, like as we talked about earlier, there's a huge narrative component to both of them. And in music, even, you know, the most simple music has some sort of narrative within it, not necessarily something that you can call a story, but simply a series of events within time that you as a listener have to decide how you're going to approach that and how you're going to interpret it. And the same is exactly true for sports, for any sport. You know, the kind of assumption that is sometimes made about sports is that they're about competition. And I think that's really ultimately like, you know, a 15% of it or something like that. I mean, it's the competition is the excuse for the narrative. And really ultimately what people care about is the narrative. Because if people only cared about competition, then they would be perfectly fine watching teams of people rolling dice or something like that. And yeah, I mean, I think like for me, there's something that connects anything that people can sort of get obsessive about, you know, or any sort of like fandom, for lack of a better word where ultimately, but for me, you know, I think sports are often particularly good at this, especially the way that people in the modern day consume sports, where there's all this information and, you know, history to go along with it. I think there definitely is a particular connection to the way a piece of music unfolds over time, and also all of the things outside of the particular piece of music, knowing about, you know, the people who play or the person who writes it, or, you know, people who get obsessive over specific labels and just the history of genres and all that, I think is in many ways very much in parallel to all of the things that surround one game. There is the narrative within the game of purely, okay, you know, who is pitching and, or let me even make it even more simpler. There's the narrative of the game in terms of what happens from moment to moment, the fact that there is a single or a strikeout or a home run and one team wins, but then there's the secondary level of who is on the mound that day and who's up to bat and who are they as players, who are they as people.
Yeah, and hidden behind the statistics that they give is like the story between the pitcher and the batter and everything else.
Yeah, and not to mention the history of the teams, and the history of the sport and the uniforms and the ballpark, and all of these things are points of information. And for me, that is so much like music when you are listening to music or dealing with the kind of extra musical stuff that inevitably comes with listening to any piece of music. They're just all these data points, essentially, which isn't to minimize it, you know, it's to kind of celebrate.
Well, hi there, everybody. This is Bob Murphy welcoming you to the first regular season game in the history of the New York Mets. Brought to you by Rheingold Extra Dry. Tonight, the New York Mets meet the St. Louis Cardinals right here in St. Louis. Lindsey Nelson, Ralph Kiner, and I are on hand to bring you every bit of the action. Yes, sir, the New York Mets are on the air in their first great season. This broadcast comes to you through the courtesy of Leibman Breweries, brewer since 1837, and the Brown Williamson Tobacco Corporation, B&W, the mark of quality in tobacco products, and is authorized in the radio rights.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of radio, I mean, baseball in particular feels to me like it is the perfect radio sport. And unlike basketball or football, where you have all these things happening at once between different players moving in different ways, and there's a particular kind of crowded visual element to it. And for basketball in particular, it's just so fast paced. But in baseball, there are all these discrete events, and even the most complicated play can ultimately be broken down by pure description. And also, baseball gives you the time for the announcer to talk about these events, what just happened in between the plays, you know, because there are always whatever 20 seconds to a minute in between plays. And that allows a broadcaster to not only describe the play, but potentially get somewhat poetic about it or give some sort of meaningful commentary that kind of goes beyond simply sports analysis that you could get on TV.
Greetings, baseball fans. This is Mel Allen greeting you from Yankee Stadium in New York City, scene of baseball's midsummer highlight, the annual All-Star Game, conceived in 1933 and now almost set for its seventh renewal. You might call this a midsummer day's dream, to paraphrase an ancient playwright. For the very thought of this gigantic spectacle out in front of us fires the imagination, really excites the fancy. It just opens your eyes to a terrific show. The stars of both major leagues. It is a grand show, ladies and gentlemen. From north, south, east, and west, they've come pouring in a steady stream into the heart of New York to sing the praises of these ball players. Sturdy National League fans are standing firmly behind their league's team and are just as sturdily opposed by a buck of solid American League adherents. The American League backers point out that the National League has won only two of the All-Star games, while the American League has caught four. National League backers counter with the claim that the law of averages is on their side and cite the fact that the National League has won two of the last three games. Well, perhaps in a little while, a couple of hours, it should be established which side has the best of the argument? Maybe, maybe not. Who can tell? You can argue all day long about the merits of the two leagues and never get anywhere, but that's baseball. Right now, the American League is out on the field taking their infield practice. As you know, this year, it's the American League's game. By that, I mean that the American League is the home team playing in an American League party. Each year, they change up. The American League players are wearing their home uniforms. Each team wearing, each member of each of the all of the American League team wearing his home team uniform. But now, for a moment, while we're waiting for this ball game to get underway, let's take a look through the past of this All-Star ball game, which started in 1933. Let's have a quick look at the records. Since the Dream Game was started in 1933, some 247,389 fans have watched the All-Star team's action. The largest crowd was in 1935 at Cleveland, when 69,812 saw the Americans win a 4-1 decision. Perhaps the smallest crowd came in the game at Boston in 1936. Some 25,556 saw the National League score their first victory 4-3. So much for the attendance figures. We don't have the official figures for the crowd out here at the Yankee Stadium as yet. We hope to have it a little later on. We'll pass it out to you. Suffice to say that there are plenty of people out here. And now, how about some facts about the games themselves? Who were the stars of those early games? Who earned the plaudits of the crowd? And so forth. Well, let's see. The game was inaugurated in 1933. The first contest was played in Comiskey Park in Chicago. The American League Stars won that game by a score of 4-2. The next year, there was no cause for complaint, though the Americans also won that game, 9-7. The National League led with its great pitching ace, King Carl Hubbell, and how he lived up to his nickname. You remember, game fans, Hubbell hurled three innings and retired with a 4-0 lead. During his stay on the mound, he earned everlasting fame by striking out five of the greatest hitters in the American League. Any baseball fan will never forget that, whether he was out for the ball game or simply read about it or heard about it over the air. King Carl struck out Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Jimmy Fox, Al Simmons, and Joe Cronin, one right after another. But the American Leaguers went to work on Dizzy Dean, Lon Warnke, and Van Lingle Mungo and managed to eke out a slim victory. In 1935, the American League pitching completely overwhelmed the National League team. The National League All-Stars collected but four hits, and the Americans won their third straight All-Star game by a score of 4-1. And finally, after 3 years of disappointments, the National League came into its own in 1936. With the great Jerome Herman, or Jerome Hanna, if you will, Dizzy Dean playing the starring role, the National League won its first All-Star game by the close score of 4-3. And it was in this game that a young rookie named Joe DiMaggio made his All-Star debut. In 1937, the American Leaguers, led by Joe DiMaggio, chalked up an 8-3 victory. That was the contest in which the New York Yankees practically won the game all by themselves. It was generally agreed at the time that if manager Joe McCarthy of the Yankees had decided to play the whole Yankee team, he would have won an easier victory, perhaps. Of course, that's mere speculation. Joe Medwick starred for the National League in that game, belting out four straight hits, if you remember. The American Leaguer sort of rubbed it in a little bit when they battered their old nemesis, Carl Hubbell, who had subdued him in a previous game and drove him to the showers. Well, that's just a quick resume of the past games and brings us up to 1938.
EA Sports. It's in the game.
Dead Man 2001. We ball it way harder than you, and I'm gonna prove it. Set up your best defense, I'm running through it. So check out the play by play with John Madden. Exhibit with EA Sports, we can't smash. Listen, it's all in the game. Let me explain, bring in the pain. Even set it off in the rain, set it off in the snow. Fourth down, 1 yard to go. Running your own franchise, or watch from the sideline. I'm here for one thing, to smash the other team. Breaking you down, everything you pass is out of bounds or incomplete. We are professional athletes, making you stumble and fumble. Your offense in deep trouble. Yeah, in that bell, feeling the power. The only thing you're hitting is the ground and the showers. A playbook full of techniques, I'm playing for keeps. Mouthpiece, put on your pads and tighten your cleats.
Coming through with the Madden family, and only the baddest athletes gonna survive. When you see four or five of my guys piling up on top of you in front of your eyes, feel the impact, dual shock starts to kick back. Hey yo, it's Madden 2001, you need to get that and feel like you in the game playing for real. It's like royalty, so nail.
It's like hot one, hot two, high.
Who the champions?
East swinging big sights. It's like hot one, hot two, high.
Who putting it down?
Swinging big sight, it's like hot one, hot two, high, taking over. He's swinging big sight, it's like hot one, hot two, high, winning the game. He's swinging big sight.
Only the realest survive, the bone crushing. Got him sitting out for games. We get penalties when I snatch your frame. I spit darts, they hang my jersey up in your park, and that's for real. So what you wanna do? Hot rhymes, I'ma drop a few. I see you like a hospital.
Greetings and welcome from EA Sports. Today's exhibition matchup is between the St. Louis Rams and the Tennessee Titans. Both teams seem ready to go, so I'll send this one over to Pat and John.
Thanks, JB. Well, John, looks like we're all set.
Yep, both of these teams look ready to go.
We'll see what both of these teams can do now as they're lined up for the kickoff. They'll start the drive from the 27. Leslie, is there an update?
I asked Coach Martz what preparations he had made for this game, and he told me that the team was rested and eager to play. They've been looking forward to this game all week, Pat.
Thanks, Leslie.
Set.
Blitz is on. Oh, tucked it away. With the takedown at the 33.
Marshall Faulk can make a lot of moves that other guys can't make.
Mm-hmm.
second and four. Back throw. He's looking to throw. He got the quarterback. Loss of 10 yards. Back to punt. They're going to have to hurry to get this play off. Number 84 was the intended target. Well, they'll turn it over on downs.
Yeah, you really have to question the decision-making here. You're saying that you're not going to trust your special team, but now you put all the pressure on your defense.
Defense showing blitz. Blitz! The top on the run. Jones with the takedown at the 17. George went nowhere.
Went nowhere fast.
Too far there.
And he has to be careful. Not only is that pass off target, there's also a good way to get your receiver decked.
Front this time. Quick drop. Warner with the throw. Williams was the intended receiver. The lob pass goes nowhere. Warner onto the center. He gets the carry. Robertson makes the stop at the 12. Gain of 5 on the play. Blitz is coming. Ball gets the call. St. Louis takes a gamble and loses.
And they'll pay the price now if the other team can do something now that they've stopped them.
With the tackle at the 5. Picked up about 4.
Oh.
to center. Throws left. Pickens, the intended target. Greco out to try the field goal. The kick sails true. It's good. That's the end of the first quarter with the score Tennessee 3, St. Louis 0. And we're ready to start the second quarter. Third and long. Looking to throw it. We'll punt it here. What?
Go-to guys as a tight end.
yards to the goal line. George tucks it away. Touchdown, Titans. The kicking unit. Flag down. He jumped early.
Yeah, he jumped early and touched an offensive player, and that forces the officials to blow the whistle.
Set.
Number 32 with the tackle at the 8 and a flag on the play.
Everybody, and welcome to East Rutherford for this exhibition game between the New York Rangers and the Devils. This is Jim Houston with Bill Clement.
And Jim, you can't help but be revved up about this one. What a matchup.
So let's drop the puck. Arnott won the faceoff. Messier gets a hold of it, turned away by Brodeur. He gets the puck to Rafalski. Richter made the save. Fleury has the puck. New York has it. Eliosh moves ahead. He gets hold of it. Fleury skates ahead. Messier. New York needs to be making a line change soon. Rafalski, short pass. Fleury. Messier grabs it. He sneaks past Danico. Messier fires it. Denied by Brodeur. Plays the puck to Danico. To Holik. Carries the puck. Breland tees up, fired it. He misses the net. New Jersey has it now. Holik lines up, ripped hard from the right. Pilon with the puck. York lines up, denied by Brodeur. Breland takes the puck. Matt tees it up, pushed away by Richter. York got it. Brodeur covers up for the whistle. To the wing. He scores!
Look at this. this. McGillney receives the pass and fires a quick wrist shot from the right side. Richter does all anyone can expect, but the puck manages to sneak by him. Nice work.
Playing with Pat LaFontaine in 92-93, Alexander McGillney became Alexander the Great.
Well, that was a golden year for him because he tied the record for most goals by a right winger. 76 big bucks.
Gomez and by number two.
Brodeur hangs on for the whistle. New Jersey puts its checking line out. Nemchinov wins the faceoff to Nedved. Sutton gets the puck from Brodeur to Gomez. Moves it. Hard shot snagged by Richter. Brodeur hangs on for the faceoff. If they want to win tonight, New Jersey will have to win more faceoffs than it loses. Play a hard-hitting physical game, give up very few odd man rushes, and keep out of trouble in terms of penalties. Sikora carries it. Blasts it, turned away by Richter. Stevens picked it up. Sikora shoots. Richter denied him. Graves takes control. Rafalski tees up. Malahov now with it.
Last minute of play.
Messier shoots. Saved by Brodeur. And he hangs on to the puck. They line up for the faceoff. The draw is won by New Jersey. Picked off by Levitt. New Jersey picks it up. And that's the end of the first period.
Your programs for tonight's game. Programs include tonight's roster changes, as well as news from around the league. Don't miss out.
The faceoff goes to New Jersey. Fleury picks it off to Leek. Skates ahead. Leech tees it up. Fired it hard. Gomez shoots. Richter made the save. Taken by New York. Graves carries it out of his own zone. Graves gets hold of the puck. Fires. Brodeur. Stick save. McGillney rips it. Oh, he missed. DeMaio quickly moves it. Brodeur gives it to Rafalski. Brodeur turns it aside.
Pretty simple. They need to get more quality shots if they want to put a few past them.
Shoots the puck. Kicked aside by Brodeur. Messier from the left. Blocked by Rafalski. Brodeur covers up. Chinov comes out to take the faceoff against Nedved. The faceoff goes to New Jersey. The Fave moves across. Shoots the puck. Stoned cold by Brodeur. New Jersey needs to be making a line change soon. Shoots it, but the door is closed by Brodeur. New Jersey scooped it up. Ahead to the blue line. Sikora gets laid out. New York jumps on it. Dvorak on a breakaway. Shoots it hard. Saved by Brodeur. He covers up. They get into position for the faceoff. To McCain. Carries the puck out of his own zone. Messier gets it. Quickly moves it. It's given to Fleury. He scores! What a goal! Messier gets the helper.
Check out this play. Fleury gets hold of the puck and releases a pretty good wrist shot from the right side. Brodeur attempts to get his trapper on it, but the puck finds a way to cross the goal line. Great play.
Bill, don't you think it's remarkable that Baron Fleury, a small man in a big man's game, has been so durable?
Jim, it's amazing. He only missed 7 games his first 10 years in the NHL.
Shoots it! Saved by Brodeur. Knocked over. New York takes control of the puck. Breakaway! Messier blasts it! Brodeur made the save.
First one, then two, then a third. Wow, is this guy focused.
Kaminsky from the left. Sikora carries the puck. Arnett fires it. He misses!
1 minute of play in the second period.
After 40 minutes of play, it's tied, 1-1.
Phone the box office or visit our website to reserve your tickets today.
Welcome back for the third period of the game. Chinov gets to the circle to face off against Messier. The faceoff goes to New Jersey. Gomez takes it. Skates ahead. Shoots from the left. Saved by Richter. Graves has it. Fires it. Picked out of the air by Brodeur. He plays the puck to White. McGillney with the puck. To Gomez. He turns it over. Ahead to the wing. Flurry! Saved by Brodeur. McGillney, short pass. Nemchinov moves ahead. Leach in control now. To Dvorak. Shoots the puck. Grabbed by Brodeur. Gives it to White. He gets it. Shoved. Nedved to Hlavich. Shoots. Brodeur. Great save. To the wing. McGillney gets knocked over. New Jersey gets hold of the puck. Arnett carries it. Knocked down. Dvorak to Hlavich. Hard shot by York. Brodeur made the save. York has it. Skates across. DeMaio went short. Kaminsky fires. Saved by Brodeur. And he hangs onto the puck for the whistle. Let's
Let's take a look at the replay.
If he keeps making saves like that one, he's going to get charged with robbery.
Face-off won by New Jersey. To the wing. Shoots! Kicked away by Brodeur.
Boy, this guy's in the zone, baby. He wants some shooting. Bring it on, guys.
Messier has it. Graves from the left. Saved by Brodeur. He hangs on.
To buy your raffle tickets for tonight's draw. Proceeds go to a variety of children's charities in your community.
Have we got a replay of that ready to go?
The shooter thinks this one's in the bag, but obviously the goalie had another idea.
The draw is won by New Jersey. It's coughed up by McKay. Kicked aside by Brodeur. Turned over. Nedved, the door is shut by Brodeur. McKay moves ahead. Door slammed shut by Richter. Dvorak moves it out of his own zone. Nedved, hard shot, saved by Brodeur. Holik has the puck to Breland. Fired it hard, saved by Richter. The pick scores! Pavich gets credit for the only assist. We've got the replay of the goal ready to go.
Well, Jim, most of the time there's nothing scientific about generating scoring chances. Move the puck fast and skate hard.
A quick recap of the scoring in this game. Fleury has scored a goal for New York. Lafave has the go-ahead goal.
Lafave assisted by number 27, Jan Klavich.
Messier moves ahead. Messier from the left. Saved by Brodeur. And he hangs on to the puck. New Jersey puts its scoring line out. Arnott wins the draw.
Last minute of play in the third period.
New York jumps on the loose puck. Under 30 seconds to go in the game. Nedved slaps up, saved by Brodeur. As time runs down, the New Jersey Devils have lost to the New York Rangers. There were several reasons this game ended up the way it did. New Jersey didn't get the offensive production they needed out of Sikora. They spent too much time scurrying around in their own zone. On the other side, New York did a great job of moving the puck around. They worked hard to keep the play in the attacking zone, and they got sensational goaltending from Richter. That's it for another great game of NHL 2001. Thanks for being with us. I'm Jim Houston.
And I'm Bill Clement, and our next great game is just around the corner. Hope you'll be with us then.
For New York Rangers, number 24, Sylvain Lefebvre.